Season 1 of Soul Operator is based on gameplay of the solo TTRPG Welcome to the Habit Trails by A. Yoland and is distributed under an attribution, non-commercial, share-alike 4.0 international license. Like the game, this season will feature horror-typical themes as well as isolation, derealization, grief, and paranoia. For episode-specific trigger warnings, or to purchase the game for yourself, check out the description of the episode. Listener discretion is advised.
Episode 2, Two of Swords.
Doomsday Preppers. Love 'em or hate 'em, there's no denying now that they had the right idea. I mean, they had the right idea to prepare for something. The likelihood of what they thought would happen was low, but at least they were learning useful survival skills. How many people can confidently say that they can get through a nuclear fallout? It probably made their lives super exciting too. All those funny little theories and conspiracies about aliens probing people. What's the obsession with probing anyway? If I was an alien, sticking things up people's butts would be probably the last thing on my mind, but maybe that's just me. I wasn't a doomsday prepper. I wish I could go back in time and convince myself that the world really was going to end in 2012, but anyway. Remember that fun superstition? Let's be honest, though. Has anything felt real since 2012? Not that I'm exactly in the best position to make that point, given that there's no indication that this place is real at all. Maybe if I'd been a prepper, I would have a real appreciation for a can of beans and its many uses. Did you know that cans of beans make for really effective homemade alarm systems? You just shove a bunch of them in front of your front door, maybe stack them in a fun pyramid shape so that if anyone tries to come in, boom, crash, and other loud noises to wake me up and keep me alive. I scared the shit out of Nate the other morning because I forgot to dismantle my little contraption. I swear, he jumped so high that I thought he was going to hit his head on the doorframe. A better person would probably feel bad about scaring him, but it was so funny. The front door does have a lock, but recent events have made me, let's say, less than confident in its abilities to keep out intruders. I missed the whole week of time when I was blissfully unaware of that possibility. I should have expected there to be scavengers, as Dean puts it. Raiders, thieves, not nice people who take my stuff, whatever. Not everyone is content in living in the house that they were assigned by whatever entity decided to put us here. Point is, every apocalypse show has them because the point of the show is always, humans are the biggest threat to themselves, and if we don't work together, we'll never survive, and zombies are just nature course-correcting and can't be evil because they're dead and can't formulate concepts like meanness. Blah, 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 blah. The Habit Trails. I don't know if I was clear enough about how maze-like the neighborhood really is. There are no maps, and every time people have tried to make them, they end up wrong. From above, it's easy to mark roads, but as soon as you try to follow them on the ground, it's like the whole layout has changed. Dead ends, ongoing roads. Getting lost if you stray too far from home isn't just an option, it's practically a guarantee. Something as simple as turning a corner could put you miles away from where you started. Not that you'd notice. The houses all look the same, after all. I have a theory that I might be able to get through all of Theseus, but I haven't been able to build up the courage. Not yet. I just got here. I don't want to try my luck. According to the rumors, the scavengers are groups of people that have gotten lost. Either deliberately or accidentally. There are no rules here. Social constructs have been thrown to the wind. People will either take that opportunity to finally try out communism or act out on their darkest urges. I think I got lucky and landed in a pretty egalitarian part of town. Sandra's been here as long as anyone can remember. There was something about her that was easy to trust, a natural sort of leadership and air of respect that comes with age. She set up quite the system, ensuring that everyone would have what they needed by virtue of donations from the neighbors. Whatever you need, you can ask for, and she'll get it for you. She smiles a lot, though the smile doesn't quite reach her eyes anymore. I think wherever she was before this, she must have been happy. The crow's feet at the corners of her eyes and the smile lines are worn into her dark skin in the way that I would like to imagine only happens when you're lucky enough to live gladly. It wasn't my house that was broken into. If it had been, I probably wouldn't be recording this because I would have done something stupid enough to get me killed. Like tripping on a can of beans. They hid a place about four houses down. Took pretty much everything of any value, food, clothes, things you might not be able to find while you're on the move in a place like this. Luckily, the house was empty because the neighborhood was having a little get-together at Sandra's house to get to know the newbies. That's still me, by the way. No one else has moved in after me. There was a couple that arrived a few days before me. Jenny and Liam. There are actually a lot of people who arrived here together, or gained a roommate over the course of their tenancy? Are we tenants? It's not like I'm paying rent, and to be honest, the landlord's doing a pretty horrible maintenance job. I know my rights. The meeting was interesting. Something like 30 people showed up, and it was shocking how they managed to cram into the kitchen and the living room, breaking off into small little cliques of neighbors. Everyone was so different from each other. Different ages, races, genders, or lack thereof. There was nothing that connected any of us at a surface level glance other than the fact that we were all here. No pattern that I could discern from the very limited small talk that could be had with memory loss. Hey, at least the entity that put us here doesn't discriminate. Right? Once most of the people had arrived, Sandra was quick to pick me out of the crowd, much to my chagrin. Nate put a comforting hand on my shoulder as she approached, squeezing gently.
Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, darling?
I can't really do her southern drawl justice, but if I say that all she's missing is the cowboy hat, I think you guys can get the picture. So I was led to the center of the living room. As soon as Sandra was in view, people quieted their hushed chatter. The silence was heavy. You can probably imagine how the rest went down. Hi, I'm Tessa. Hi, Tessa. Oh, where am I from? Who knows? Nobody actually asked me that. Nobody asked me anything, actually. They just let me speak and looked at me with eyes of pity? Understanding? The kids looked excited to meet someone new, but anyone old enough to understand what was going on just looked like they were sorry for me, and all I wanted to do was collapse into myself. Putting on a brave face was hard when everyone else just looked like that. Sandra put her hand on my shoulder, and I looked at her. She smiled, kindly, and nodded to dismiss me from the proverbial stage as she started to go over some housekeeping things. I was barely listening as I walked back over to Nate, eyes following me as I went. A lot of people introduced themselves to me, but I'll be honest, names didn't really stick. I recognized some faces, mostly some of my closer neighbors that had politely smiled or waved at me when they saw me walking the 2 seconds it took to get to Nate's place when I needed something. I was just more focused on faces, I think. I did learn some things. I learned that there were a lot more kids here than I initially thought. Always accompanied by at least one adult, there were kids as young as 5 in the neighborhood. Dean had a few friends his age. Someone found chalk and they've been taking full advantage of the new art supply. You know, he's only 16 or something, but he already towers over me, which is fucked up. And he's holding up pretty well, considering. He has this sweet way about him that only kids have. This innocent kindness. Kids are shockingly resilient, like sponges that absorb the circumstances around them and survive. They're blank slates, even more so now. I envy them a bit, I think. I learned that keeping time was almost impossible. Some days would seem to last longer than others, and without the change in seasons, it felt like we were on pause. Hen, one of the people in charge of the community garden, told me quite proudly that they'd been here for at least 5 months, holding up their cane with countless etched tally marks as proof. I tried to ignore how the scratches seemed to fade in and out of focus, forming disjointed words that made my throat tight. Eyes in the fog. Living alone doesn't exactly help with my paranoia. This is a big house. A big house with only 3 rooms outside of the kitchen and the living room. My windowless bedroom, the bedroom down the hall, and the bathroom. The halls are like the roads. Logically, I know that this is a normal-sized house, especially when I look at it from the outside. But in the dark, when I can't sleep, and all I can do is stare down the hall, it stretches out into the darkness. The walls pulse and narrow down a winding path into nowhere. My flesh crawls and I'm cold beneath 3 layers of clothes. You're never alone in the dark. It's impossible to be completely confident that there's nothing lurking in the corner of the room that's too dark for you to see. Even if there is really nothing there, your mind will make it so you never believe it. Maybe it's a survival instinct. Either way, there's no shaking the feeling that I am both so completely alone and being carefully watched all at once. The break-in gave me something tangible to pin my nervousness to when Dean asked me what was wrong. Kids, man. They're nothing if not perceptive. No matter how much you think as an adult, kids can always tell when you're lying to them. Misdirection's the name of the game when it comes to convincing a kid of anything. And besides, is it actually paranoia if I'm justified in fearing for my life? It's not like there's anything in particular to deter people from breaking in. People have been able to make weapons out of random junk laying around, but as far as I know, no one's found anything better than a piece of wood whittled into a spear or a couple of boards clumsily taped together into a bat. There aren't even any knives in the kitchen. I'm forced to cut my strawberries from the community garden with the side of my spoon. Listen, I don't know if I was ever the type of person to be threatening, but I'm certainly not right now, not with nothing to defend myself. And the truth is, I don't really know anyone here. I don't trust anyone yet. I know you guys are probably thinking, Tessa, you literally let Pretty Boy Nate from next door serenade you with Wonderwall so that you could sleep in the last tape. What happened? Number one, you've never seen Nate, so you can't possibly know he's pretty. And number two, I was in a state of shock. Things are different now. I have my wits about me, so to speak. I can think clearer now than I could before. I still talk to him, but I've distanced myself a bit. I do feel bad about that, especially because that means I've also been distancing myself from Dean. Look, I barely know anything about myself. How can I know anything about them? Am I being unfair? Maybe. Nate's been nothing but kind to me since I arrived, even if that was only a week ago. He's given me food, advice, comfort. Things that would make anyone trust someone. He didn't have to do any of that. I don't feel good about the fact that I don't trust him. I hate how much I've relied on him. And there are things that I feel like I can't tell him, and I don't even know why. For example, I remember something from before. I remember a beach. There are no beaches here, no ocean or forests, just the neighborhood. I remember that it was dark, but not so dark that I couldn't see the way that the tide pulsed against the shore, street lamps illuminating the view. The stars that hung above me were funhouse mirrored on the ocean, and it wasn't too cold, which surprised me when I recalled the memory. And this was a true recollection. It wasn't like the intrinsic knowledge that I seemed to have about things, like when I pull a fun pop culture fact out of my ass. To be clear, I don't remember watching Star Wars Attack of the Clones, but I can word for word go on a tangent about sand and how much I hate it. The memory itself is so inconsequential, and yet, whenever I think about sharing it with him, I clam up. He hasn't shared anything with me, and sometimes I wonder if he feels the same way. I think I've got a better idea about how this whole pseudo-amnesia thing works. It's not so much that my memories are wiped, it's more like they're behind a paywall and I need to pay a very specific currency to free them. And I mean very specific. So specific that I haven't been able to unlock anything else other than the memory of the beach. And to be honest, I don't even know what I did to unlock that. The closest thing I had was walking down the road at night, alone. But there are no stars here, and the thing in the sky that's like the sun but isn't the sun doesn't count. It's always shrouded by clouds, and it doesn't do much in the way of warmth. It's a cheap imitation. I couldn't help myself. I needed to see how the scavengers got into that house to give myself something real to do. So, yesterday, I left the uneasy safety of my new home and I walked the thankfully straight line to the scene of the crime. The residents have been moved into another house up the street, so it was empty and dark when I got there. It wasn't the door that had been caved in. They'd taken stones and broken through the front windows. Of course they did. It makes sense. Sure, it's loud, but everyone was at the meeting, so there was no one to hear them. And it was easy. Breaking in through the front door would have taken too long, and a stone through a glass window was nothing. I boarded up my windows as soon as I got home. From the inside. I don't need other people noticing how scared I really am that the little comfort I have will be stolen away from me. My blinds are always closed to hide the wooden panels from prying eyes. Part of me wonders if that, in and of itself, will make me feel less neighborly. People notice blinds that never open. Every neighborhood has that house. You'd pass it in the car, and no matter what time of day it was, the blinds would be firmly shut, and your mind couldn't help but wonder as to why. What's going on in that house? I can't be the only one who feels this way, who's this afraid. The people here seem so normal, so adjusted, and I just don't understand how. Even Jenny and Liam act like they're part of the town. They're married, you know? They don't remember anything about their lives together, but they just know that they were together. Who knows if it was even a happy marriage? Not them, that's for sure. It's all so wrong here. It feels like everyone is hiding something, and they probably are. I can't blame them. Why are we here? I'm going to find out. I can't stand feeling like this, like I have no control. I need to do something. I know that they're hiding something, something nobody wants to talk about. Whispers in the dark. I don't have a plan yet, but you'll be the first to know when I do.
give Hen the rake you borrowed.
Fuck. Mm-hmm. Shit.
Are you sure you remember?
This back. Okay.
Okay, definitely.
Window.
Right. So, what's that outside then?
A ground comb?
Ground comb.
It combs the ground.
Yeah, that's definitely not a rake.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, look, Hen probably wants their ground comb back, though, so why don't we go over to the garden together tomorrow?
Can we bring Tessa?
Well, I don't know, kiddo. She's been through a lot these past few days.
Nate, do you think she's mad at me?
Why would she be mad at you, bud?
I think I annoyed her with too many questions.
I doubt that's true.
Then why is she ignoring us?
I think she's just... I don't know. Look, she just woke up. We need to be patient, right?
Yeah.
Listen, she's gonna help with the inventory later. Why don't you tag along?
Can I? I was gonna hang out with Connie.
Bring her. I'm sure she can use the company.
Oof. Fuck.
Wait here.
Okay, it's just a jump. Just jump. You'll be fine. It's really not that high. You will be so okay. Okay. On the count of three. One, two, three. Whew. That was fine. Son of a bitch!
Tessa?
Nothing! Okay. That was embarrassing. I think I played it off well enough, but my arm still hurts. Who just leaves a rake on the ground? Anyway, there goes that plan. It wasn't a plan. I don't know. Sneaking into someone's house is only a minor breach of privacy, right? I don't even know what I was looking for. Something to justify the anxiety, maybe? Proof that they're real people and not just some elaborate coping mechanism? Whatever. I feel better now. Mostly. Kind of. I feel better enough. Well, duty calls. Nate promised that he was going to show me how the inventory works. That is something someone keeping people at arm's length can do, right? Well, anyway, until next time, you. Hopefully, I'll have something more concrete for you. What the fuck?
Hey! Get the fuck out of here!
Mask. What the fuck? Okay. Someone just tried to break in, but I think I scared them off, at least for now. I threw a can of beans at them. It cracked their mask. I've never seen anything like it. It didn't have a face.
This episode featured Tatiana Gefter as Tessa Whitlock, Mike LeBeau as Nathan Sutter, and Michael Blundell as Dean Sutter, with music and editing by Jay Stroutman. For more information regarding our show, please check out our social medias under Soul Operator Pod.
Knave of Cups is an online shop dedicated to supporting inclusion and creativity in the tabletop role-playing community. They carry a variety of cards, puzzles, and role-playing games from independent artists and creators around the globe, including Welcome to the Habitrails, Use promo code SOUL, that's S-O-U-L, to take $5 off your next order of $25 or more on www.knaveofcups.com.
A special thank you to our patrons, Tay-Tay Hey-Hey, Probs Not Hawkeye, Lumi, Starlight, Sirius, and Claire K. You all help keep the show affordable to produce, and we could not be more thankful for your support. To join them and to hear your own name at the end of an episode, check out our $5 and up tiers on our Patreon, www.patreon.com/soul operator pod.com.